Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Generation Y ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible, starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia of being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. From Wondery. How are you doing tonight, Aaron?
I'm doing just fine, Justin. How are you?
I'm doing great. Any announcements?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, for the longest time, we would go to meetups or respond to emails, what have you, and people would ask, do you guys record together? Well, we've been recording together for quite a while now, but due to the current coronavirus situation, we're recording remotely.
This is the first time we've recorded remotely in a long time, so I hope we don't talk over each other too much.
Yeah, it's quite different, and I prefer to have you in the room, but we're trying to stick to...
guidelines.
Yeah, the guidelines that have been put before us in order to help save the world, right? We're trying to prevent people from getting coronavirus or spreading it. You and I so far seem to be virus-free, but it's just precautions.
Well, and the scary thing is you can be asymptomatic... and go out and give it to a bunch of other people and not even realize it. So we're just being super cautious.
So if anybody wonders if anything sounds different, it might not sound different because, well, we have pretty decent equipment these days.
Yeah.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. FedEx offers fast delivery, more visibility, simple returns, and weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. population on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. With FedEx, you get picture proof of delivery, ensuring you always know where your package is. Returns are simple with packageless and paperless returns. Plus, FedEx Ground is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. So, what are you waiting for? See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
So tonight's case is a brutal murder of a mother and a hostile boyfriend with some secrets. But it doesn't end there, does it, Aaron? What are we talking about tonight?
Tonight we're talking about the murder of Nicole Vanderhaeden. Nicole was known as Nikki. She was 31 years old, a graduate from the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay, in 2010, and had double major in science and education. She liked going outdoors. She was into fitness. She was said to find peace and joy in simple things in life. So she liked going out into nature, doing jogs or walks, and loved animals. She was already a mother of two previous to her relationship with her boyfriend, which we'll be talking about in this case. The two from the previous marriage were Michaela and Tyler. At this time, had a boyfriend named Douglas Dietrich with two S's. They had a child together who was 6 months old named Dylan. She and Doug were planning a night out with friends, and so they got a babysitter. This takes place May 20th and 21st, 2016, in Green Bay, Wisconsin. They were going to go to a bar called The Watering Hole. There was a concert that night.
Steel Panther.
Do you know this band?
Yes.
I have never listened to Steel Panther. Fill me in. What are they about?
They're a satire glam rock band, like hair band. So they're like Motley Crue or Poison, but Weird Al Yankovic style. They're hilarious. If you don't know Steel Panther, you're missing out on a whole portion of life, and you really need to at least give a few of their songs a listen. It will give you a chuckle.
I haven't truly lived, huh? So the way I understand it is the concert ends about 11 at night, and Nikki decides to go with some other friends to go to another bar. This other bar is known as the Sardine Can. Doug doesn't go with her and the other friends because he's busy talking to someone. And he's like, I'll catch up with you later.
And it's at this point that it's said that Nikki and Doug have not been getting along very well at the concert or at all during the whole entire night. They've been arguing and bickering and just not loving on each other very much.
So maybe another reason for him to stay behind for a little bit. It's said that he's talking with high school friends, but maybe they just need a little distance. You know, it's like when you're away from someone for a little bit, you miss them.
Yeah. Absence makes the heart grow fonder. So she's at the Sardine Can. These are just amazing names for bars, by the way, Aaron. I have been to a lot of funny name bars, but between the Watering Hole and Sardine Can, I'm missing out on something.
Some of our listeners have probably frequented these bars.
Yes.
So she has been sending texts to her boyfriend, and she's getting more upset because, well, he hasn't shown up yet.
In these text messages, she's being very aggressive and asking him what lady he has been with. And
you're self-editing here.
Yeah. This is just riddled with profanities. So I'm making it almost somewhat sarcastic. She's like, what lady have you been with? You're not very nice to me. And you don't have any friends.
Well, and she's saying that your friends won't give up who you're with. Like they're saying they don't know. But she's suspecting that he's actually stayed behind because he's flirting with someone or hanging out with a lady friend.
Hooking up is essentially what she's saying.
And she's getting more and more aggressive. He attempts to answer her back. And he's like, be good. I'll see you at the Sardine Can. Like, chill. It's okay. I'll be there soon. But I think at some point he realizes she's not being funny. Your message can get lost. It's misunderstood.
Yeah, even if she's trying to be funny or trying to make a joke over text, tone is lost. This happens to me all the time. I hate texting or messaging with people because they don't know how I'm coming off. I could just say, what's up? And that's either, what's up? How you doing? Or what's up? Want to fight? I mean, you don't know what that means. And he's suspecting that she's drunk and getting aggressive and saying horrible things to him. So he's distancing himself.
So he claims that he tried calling her multiple times. I think he even says that he believes that her phone is dead.
Because it's going straight to voicemail.
Yeah. So he doesn't understand why that would happen. But I think the other thing that happened was she got upset because she tried calling him and it went to voicemail. And then one of the friends called him around the same time and he picked up. So that's not a good look.
And at the same time, Doug is hanging out with friends, probably drinking, but then they bust out the Adderall, mash it up, and start snorting it. So, yeah, raging party here.
And here's the kicker. The friend that called him was a woman.
Mm.
So it's like his own girlfriend calls, no answer. Another friend of his, who's a woman, calls, picks up. The group of friends that she's with, they know she's angry. They do their best, but they can't stop her from walking out. She wants to leave. She's had enough of this evening. A friend of theirs named Aaron catches up with her on Howard Street. And he's saying, let me get you home. You know, you can get home and just chill there. You shouldn't be out. He's trying to help her out because he can tell how upset she is. But she's too worked up. And she starts screaming and kicking at him, telling him he's got to get away. Leave me be. She walks away on foot.
And that's the last Aaron or anyone sees of her for the night. Now, Doug claims that he goes home, goes to bed, right?
Doug got home around 2:40 in the morning. He said he checked in on his baby and he was unsuccessful in reaching Nikki. So he gave up and went to bed.
Now, I want to know what this guy's sleeping pills are because he claims he goes to sleep after drinking and snorting Adderall. I don't know how that's possible, but he happens to be wearing a Fitbit that records his sleeping patterns. So there we go.
He had one of those very basic Fitbits.
Yeah.
It doesn't have a watch face or anything. He was wearing that all night, even to bed.
So it shows that he was at home sleeping. Now, Aaron, I have to say that you could go home, take your Fitbit off, throw it on your dog or your baby or something, and hey, then it's just going to show that you're home and you're sleeping, right? And then you could go out and murder your girlfriend.
I don't know. I don't know if that would work. I don't know.
It doesn't work. And yeah. I don't want to give anyone any ideas, but you would have had to have had a lot of premeditation to pull that off.
The babysitter's name, Dallas Kennedy. She had been there all evening while the baby's parents were out. And now she was relieved she could leave. But it was weird because when Doug got in, he told her, I can't get a hold of Nikki. You know, I don't know why he's saying that. I guess to explain why Nikki's not home yet. Obviously, they've been fighting. So, you know, maybe she's just not wanting to come home yet. She knows her kid's safe because the babysitter's been there. And if Doug goes home, he can watch the kid. But something weird happens. Dallas says to Doug, is she in the trunk of your car? Is this a bad joke or does she know something?
Well, they hadn't been getting along and there's been turmoil in the household. So it's like me, I half joke, I'm half serious all the time. Is she in the trunk of your car? Did you have to do her in because you're not getting along? Waiting for an answer. Doug says no.
At 6:30 in the morning, Doug got up and fed Dylan some breast milk that Nikki had already prepared and stored. And then about 11 a.m., he gets back up again because he had gone back to sleep after feeding his son.
Oh, because he's hungover, yeah.
Oh, yeah, he's in a bad state. And he just figures Nikki's not home because they hadn't been getting along. She's somewhere else. She's with a friend or something, and he's fine with that.
Yeah, it's actually, I think, a normal response to, we were fighting all night. She thinks I'm cheating on her and she didn't come home. I'm not going to worry about it right now.
It's respectful. Like, give her space. She'll contact me if she wants to talk.
Yeah. But he is messaging the babysitter, Greg, and some of Nikki's friends and sisters, asking if they've heard from her, asking if they've seen her post anything on social media. And they're saying no.
There are some hikers who, just before 2 in the afternoon, stumble upon a dead body. They actually thought it was a deer because of the color. It didn't take them long to figure out, no, this is a dead woman.
they call 911, Justin, and it turns out after an autopsy that this victim had been strangled and beaten, especially to the head. And those were the causes of death, strangulation and blunt force trauma to the head. The medical examiner couldn't actually tell which happened first.
Yeah, she said that there were so many injuries on the body that it was hard to tell which were post-mortem and anti-mortem, I guess the term is. So she's got over 240 injuries. She's been beaten, fractured jaw. It's suggestive that she'd been sexually assaulted, ligature marks, and of course, the blunt force trauma to her head.
There were actually a couple of notes here. One was that she was alive for a while she was being beaten. And these are what they would call homicidal blows.
Yeah.
Severe trauma. And whatever object had been used to inflict blunt force trauma left strange shapes on her. What they say were repetitive zigzag patterns on her skin.
Now it's about 4:30 in the afternoon when friends and family start to search local hospitals and calling local police stations and search for Nikki and decide to fill out a missing persons report.
Who's the first person police will visit?
The boyfriend who you've been fighting with all night, who's drinking alcohol and snorting Adderall and probably is cheating on you. Yeah, that's the first person the police are going to go to. But I will say that the police don't know all of these details yet, but they definitely know that he's the boyfriend and they're going to go to him right away.
And a lot of family members are actually already at the house because everyone is concerned. And so they all want to be at the house in case she shows up or contacts Doug or one of them. They will all know it.
So at 4:30, when the missing person report is filed, Doug is in on this. He's part of filing that missing persons report. It wasn't like he was unaware or against it. He was there.
The sergeant that is assigned to the case checks Doug over. Just wants to see if he'd been in any kind of a scrap.
Yeah, any altercation, if he has scratches, marks, anything on him.
And doesn't see anything, I guess. Now, at this point, they don't know that a body has been found. That's to come. I mean, because they're going to identify the victim.
Who's beaten so badly that they have to use dental records to identify her.
But after the police leave, after they're there for a little bit and speaking with people, one of the family members, Heather, gets a text from someone saying there was a body found in Bellevue. And of course, the first thought that everyone has is, oh my God, what if that's Nikki? May 22nd, 2016, it's midnight. Doug is asked by the cops to go to the sheriff's office and they want to talk to him.
They always do this in the middle of the night. It's weird to me.
I think they want to catch you off guard.
Yeah.
You know, you think, oh, I'm going to settle down for the night. If he's truly concerned, maybe he can't sleep anyway. So there he is. He goes to the sheriff's office. When he gets there, they tell him that the body that was discovered was wearing a pink wristband. It's the same kind of wristband they give out at the watering hole, you know, when they check you in.
Yeah, for the concert and everything.
Apparently, Doug's reaction was to start crying, start bawling.
He broke down.
He's there for a good 3 or 4 hours before his parents come and get him. He starts to think, wait a minute. They've come and talked to me twice now. I've had this contentious relationship as of late, especially that evening. They probably think I'm involved.
Well, yeah. So he lawyers up like he should. And he actually refuses to give a DNA sample and says, you need to get a warrant if you want to search my house or do anything else.
He's not cooperative.
Yeah.
How does that look for him, though? Yeah. He was drunk all night. He wasn't hanging out with her. She never made it home. Even the babysitter asked if Nikki was in the trunk of his car. Yeah. So it's not looking good for Doug.
They end up arresting him on suspicion of first-degree intentional homicide, and he is held in the Brown County Jail for 18 days while police investigate. They end up holding him on $1 million bond. So they move forward with this. They feel they have enough on him.
There's a search of the surrounding property and neighbors are interviewed. Some interesting findings. A neighbor of Doug and Nikki's said that they had seen blood on the street, and while he was mowing his lawn, he found a wire. Now, the ligature mark on her neck suggested a wire. So he had said, I just threw it on the side of the road. But they go around and they're collecting these things, and they're looking at this red stuff that appears to be blood. The wire is tested. It actually shows that the blood on it is Nikki's. It also has her DNA on it and DNA from an unknown male.
Which they just assume it's Doug, but he refused a DNA sample. They're waiting for the warrant.
This right away is telling them that she was probably attacked and murdered near the home, which makes it look even worse for Doug.
Yeah, he's right across the street from his house. Come on.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. And immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements. I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better, notice things like your hair and your nails feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
Before we go on, there were some suspicious things like in the garage and on a piece of clothing, but none of that turned out to be connected to the case. So there is stuff even closer to the home that turned out not to be connected, that looked suspicious, looked like blood, didn't turn out to be blood. There was animal blood in the garage. That was another thing that looked suspicious. But this wire and the blood found in the street connected. Also, when they were looking in the field where her body had been found, they did end up finding her bloody clothing. They found also items that had belonged to Nikki, like her purse, by a guardrail for Highway 172.
It was kind of down the way from where her body was found, like somebody had just ditched it.
They need to get DNA samples from Doug. He wasn't cooperating, but heck, they can get a warrant, right?
Oh, yeah.
And they do. So they get his DNA. They start searching his car, his house. They search Nikki's car and they swab everybody because most people want to help. They want to contribute their DNA to see if there's a match, if there's not, clear me. Everyone just wants this case solved because, well, everyone loved Nikki.
Yeah. And the police officers are looking at the evidence, looking at where the body was found, looking at where this wire was found. And they have DNA, and now they have Doug's DNA. And they compare it all. What did they find out, Aaron?
They had DNA samples from a couple of places. They had it from the wire, and they also had it from Nikki's sock. This DNA did not match Doug Dietrich.
What? Wow.
It's shocking. And so you think, oh, what, was it contaminated, or what happened here? Because he looked like such a good suspect.
He did. I will absolutely say that up until this point, I'm thinking, yeah, right. You went to bed. Your story's not quite adding up. Whatever.
Yeah, you think maybe he got really drunk and then got angry with her and attacked her outside. Because the injuries that happened to her, they even said there was evidence that she was stomped. So it really looked personal. Why wouldn't it be Doug?
Yeah.
But the DNA does not match him. Well, their next step is they have to submit this DNA sample to see if there's a match in the system.
Yeah, and it comes back as somebody else. And normally I would say, well, just because it didn't match Doug doesn't mean that he wasn't involved, but who did it come back as?
Yeah, this DNA sample from the sock matched a man by the name of George Birch.
Now, George Birch has no affiliation with Doug, does not know Doug, and Doug does not know him. So why is George Birch's DNA on a sock and a ligature at the scene of a murder?
Well, they go and they talk with George, and they get his cell phone. They analyze it. They end up finding out that he was in all the right places to be connected with this crime. He was at the watering hole for quite a while. He was also over by Nikki's home.
Interesting. So how did this guy end up with Nikki that night?
The only thing I can see from the information is he must have seen her at a bar.
After questioning him, he says, yeah, I was sitting at the bar and I saw an attractive woman there and I decided to spark up a conversation and get to know her a little better. But he lawyers up pretty quick too, because he figures that he is going to be a suspect in this case.
In the end, the police feel like this is a clear-cut case. They believe that George Birch is responsible for this horrific crime, the murder of Nikki Vanderhaeden. And they charged George with first-degree murder, and they arrested him on September 7th, 2016. He goes to trial.
Now, I will admit, Aaron, I watched almost 3 hours of his testimony because he actually goes on the stand to defend himself. And he has quite the story.
He says that he and Nikki seem to hit it off and he drives her over to her house, but they don't go in. They stay outside.
She says that her babysitter's there and she didn't want to go inside with him. So instead they make out in his truck and one thing leads to another.
And then they move to the back, only he doesn't fit back there with her because he's 6'7" and about 250 pounds.
So he says that he's standing outside of the vehicle, having sex with her while she's laying on the back seat. And then the next thing he remembers is waking up on the grass by his truck. And there's a man with a gun standing over him.
He said that he believed the man had a gun just because of the way he was standing and motioning with his hand. And so he felt threatened. Plus, he felt like he must have been knocked unconscious. One minute he's having relations with Nikki, and the next minute he's coming to.
So he goes on to say that this man instructs him to go to the back of the vehicle where he sees Nikki's body laying there. And he doesn't know if Nikki is dead or alive.
Which he is bloody.
Yeah. And of course, remember, they were just having sex, so most of her clothing was off.
She just had her socks on.
And man with a gun instructs him to pick her up, place her back in the vehicle, and then the man gets in because it's a full cab truck. So
I think it's a Chevy Blazer.
Yeah, so there's a back seat and instructs him to drive out to a very secluded area and then tells him to get out of the truck, pick up her body, walk down sort of an embankment, and he was struggling to carry her body and he dropped her. And at the time he dropped her, sort of threw the gunman off, turned around and got the drop on the gunman, pushed him, ran back to his truck, jumped in, drove away, but he was in like first gear or something. Like he was in a low gear. So he like was really scared because he thought the gunman was going to catch him. Finally got it out of the low gear and then turned to the right and looked and saw all of Nikki's belongings, her clothes, her purse, what have you. Freaked out, rolled down the window, tossed it out the window, So that's why it ends up by the guardrail. And he says that he looks up on his phone, directions home. So we have all of his phone records showing him at her house and at where the body was found, and then literally directions home from there.
If you're a guilty man and you're trying to come up with a story to protect yourself, this isn't a very good story.
I mean, this is where you have to think his story is essentially insinuating that he was having sex with Nikki out in front of her house. Doug came out, caught them, hit him over the head with his gun, and then brutalized Nikki right there in the neighborhood, like in literally the neighbor across the street's front yard, beat her to a bloody pulp, because remember, that's where the ligature and everything was found. George somehow is knocked out through all of this. And then Doug tells him to pick up her body, put it in the car, drive it to another location, dump it. And then Doug walks home from that place. It just starts falling apart real quick.
Yeah, there are a lot of questions that stuff that's covered at the trial. He's asked, why didn't you just go in the house? Why didn't she just send the babysitter packing and then you could go in? I mean, I think that's easily answered, because what if her boyfriend shows up? But then again, if she's in some guy's vehicle outside, that doesn't seem too good either.
No. So the prosecution's saying, you went to drop her off. You made a move on her. She rejected you. You didn't like the rejection and it turned violent. The defense is saying this was all consensual until Doug, her boyfriend, came out and beat you, kidnapped you, and made you dispose of her body with him.
Which is why there's no evidence, apparently, of Doug being involved. But yet, whoever did this to her, it was a prolonged, brutal attack that involved strangulation, beating, stomping. I mean, it was vicious. So how does Doug not leave any evidence? And, you know, when you go through the trial and you find out that it's a consensual sex versus a sexual assault and murder, there are some things here that really don't add up well for George Birch.
During his examination by the defense and prosecution, it's interesting to see George take the stand and defend himself. But the lingering question that both the defense and prosecution leave on is, why didn't you call 911 when you got away? Why didn't you report this? And George initially just says, I was freaked out. I didn't know what to do. Then he goes on to say that he was on probation for grand larceny. He was on probation in Virginia, but being that he was in Wisconsin, when you're on probation, sometimes you can't leave the state. So he says he was afraid that if he admitted that he was somewhere else, he would be in violation of probation and go right back to jail. Now, I understand that that's a concern, but I think that if you are privy to a murder, I don't think violating your probation's really going to be the first thing on your mind. I think that you're going to want to report this and do the right thing. And I think most prosecutors or probation officers might give you a pass on that violation if you are the star witness in a murder or kidnapping and a murder.
It seems like there's a bit of desperation here. What kind of story can we come up with to fit the crime that helps me?
I can't distance myself from this crime. I literally have to put myself there because my phone puts me there. Everything puts me there, but I didn't do it.
Yeah, Google services was tracking him all along.
Yeah.
And they know where he was and when, and he's the one person that was in all the right places, well, or the wrong places.
And it's interesting because the defense wants Doug Dietrich's Fitbit information thrown out or made inadmissible, because they say, you know, that doesn't prove anything. Yet they're making this double argument of, you can't trust that technology, so throw it out. Yet we have technology and everything that's showing that George was absolutely there. So I find it to be a contradiction myself.
Well, remember though, they're just trying to make that information work because they know that's not going to get thrown out.
Yeah.
I mean, that came off of his phone. So he's kind of in trouble with that. I guess with the Fitbit, they might have been thinking, that's kind of a new device, newish. And how many times was that used in a trial before? So I think they're trying to say there's no precedent here. You can't trust this. Who knows? But I mean, literally, they could see how many steps he'd taken that night. And they can tell when he stopped taking steps. And of course, your Fitbit can track when you're sleeping, all that.
Also, they didn't find anything egregious on George's body or the back of his head. He says that he was knocked out. We would assume he was pistol whipped to the back of the head with a gun, right? I mean,
doesn't even attempt to say, I guess. Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, I just got a paper cut the other day. It's still visible a week later. So I'm assuming that if somebody hit me hard enough in the back of the head with a gun, it would leave a mark. And if they didn't hit me with a gun, then they would have to punch me in the face as hard as they could when I'm not looking. And there's a picture of George Birch on his fishing trip the very next day, holding a large fish he just caught. Because that's what George did the next day. He didn't call 911. He didn't report this. He went and hung out with his buddy on a fishing trip. And he's smiling, holding up a big fish. And there's not a mark on his face. He's not bleeding from the back of the head. Everything's cool.
Well, the picture doesn't show the back of his head. But I guess the main point the prosecution was making is you were freaked out. But yet the next day you're grinning in this picture. And you've got a fish. And so the next day you were having a great day.
Yeah.
And, you know, he tries to paint it in a different light saying, oh, well, I wouldn't say I wasn't upset or I wasn't thinking about this stuff, but he can't get out of this.
He just painted himself into a corner over and over. And his explanations fall apart under the slightest scrutiny.
Yeah. They have witnesses who say Nikki would not have done what he claimed she did with him. You know, she might have hung out with people, but she wasn't going to have sex in the back of a Blazer in front of her home. That's not her. And when you have witness after witness coming forward and saying, that's insulting, they know her. And this is some guy with a criminal past, which we'll get to, who's saying this. Worse yet, his story is that she was nude in the back of his Blazer, except for the socks. Why are her clothes so dirty? Yeah. Why do they show signs that she had been assaulted?
They have blood. They've been ripped up, blood and dirt all over them. So she was wearing them at the time of the assault.
In other words, the prosecution's case, the one they present, makes the most sense because theirs is that he was taking her home and then he wanted to have relations with her, let's say. And she said, no, I'm going in. And he said, no. This is a 6'7", 250-pound man who's not taking no from Nikki. And then he's assaulting her. They can tell from her injuries, this brutal attack, it all fits because she was attacked outside of her home, essentially. So the defense's case falls apart. It just doesn't hold any water.
Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Some of us spend our lives wishing we had more time, but time for what? If time was unlimited, what would you use it for? If you need to squeeze a special thing into your schedule, do you even know what's important to you and how to make that a priority? Well, with therapy, you can find out what matters to you so you can do more of it. We all need to vent sometimes. We all need to talk about some of the things that have happened to us. And I'll tell you right now, your friends might be sick of hearing about it. So take the burden off them. Let a professional help you. Sometimes it's as simple as just getting something off your back and letting somebody else know so you can feel validated and move on with your life. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/GenY today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/GenY.
I know that Doug took the stand as well. He's taken a beating on our episode a bit because he and Nikki were kind of experiencing some real trouble that night.
their relationship was on the rocks, definitely.
Yeah, and you know, apparently it had been on the rocks before and they made it through it. So who's to say they wouldn't have gotten through this? I mean, it happens, especially when you have a little one. Things aren't as easy when you have a little one. Hence probably why they went out. You know, you get a babysitter, you go out, you try to have a good night. But he took the stand and was talking about how early on in the evening they were having fun. He talked about how much he loved her and how they had plans to get married one day. He said, some point in the night, we got separated. The night gets away from you. And of course, you have the angry texts, which, yeah, you know, you can take the wrong way. But there are enough people that saw his reactions to what was going on, and they all believe that they were legitimate when he was crying, when he was upset and worried about Nikki, or devastated when he found out that she had been murdered. It was clear that he was incapable of handling the news.
Well, you know, on the face of it, you can look at his actions that night and say they look bad. He didn't reply to her texts. He was off with somebody else. He did leave her at the bar, and he didn't report her missing until 4:30 the next day. But I'm looking at this and thinking, have none of these people had a fight with their girlfriend before? Because that's pretty much how it plays out. You know, you give each other some distance, and then by midday the next day, you start to worry. But first thing in the morning, you're like, yeah, probably said some things we shouldn't have last night. We'll just let it go. I don't find his actions that night to be that suspicious at all. But it's really hard for me to grasp that he would come out, find his girlfriend with another man in the middle of the street, knock this guy out. I mean, and by the way, it's not that hard to knock somebody out, but it's not like the TV shows and the movies. You can hit somebody over and over and over again with the butt of a gun and not knock them out. You can hit somebody over the head with a bottle and they're just going to scream, ouch. It's not the way it is in the movies where you just go clunk and you knock out and then you wake up a few minutes later. That's not how that works.
This was a 9-day trial. They had 50 witnesses. What did the jury find? Because they deliberated for about 3 hours on this case, which means they didn't deliberate that long, did they, Justin?
No, they had their minds made up way before. They found the defendant, George Stephen Birch, guilty of first-degree intentional homicide. And this is a state without a death penalty. So they felt that life without parole is the best they can do. Now, George Birch has maintained his innocence, maintained that Doug was the one that perpetrated this crime. But I think, or I hope, that a lot of you can see that his Fitbit alibi actually works.
And not only that, but George Birch's story doesn't fit what happened. And not only that, it's insulting. And I think that's why the jury found against him. It's interesting and expected that the defense goes after the boyfriend. But that tactic did not work. And I don't think it would ever work, because there is enough evidence to show that Doug wasn't involved. We started off by talking about there's no connection between Birch and Dietrich. There is no connection. And even Birch says, oh, I didn't know him until now. That's the guy that had the gun on me.
Now, we've been giving Doug a good pass here, but Doug has had his own problems since this trial. Doug was scheduled to go to trial for felony charges, second degree reckless endangerment, and false imprisonment. These all stem from domestic abuse violations involving Nikki's sister, who he was kind of co-parenting the child with. And this happened 9 months after the murder. So Nikki's sister will end up calling police and saying that Doug was there and, you know, an altercation broke out. Then he ended up forcing her into his vehicle, which is the false imprisonment.
Yeah, and he had touched her leg, she says, in a sexual manner. So obviously some stuff happening there. This was pled out, and he pled no contest in July of 2018 to these charges. And so the recommendation from the prosecutor and the defense was to withhold judgment until October of 2019. And this really has to do with his behavior between the time that they did the plea deal and when they would make the final judgment.
So if he's on good behavior, they can give him more of a slap on the wrist. But if he keeps screwing up, because how did this even come about, then they can come down on him.
And Doug Dietrich wanted some things from George Birch, didn't he? Because he was responsible for Nikki's murder. So he wanted money for funeral expenses, for childcare, counseling, for salary that was lost, damages, legal expenses, you name it. He wanted him billed for everything, which totaled, I don't know how much the total was,
like,
but
$350,000.
Yeah, some crazy amount of money. But, you know, hey, George Birch was responsible for this, so why not, right?
Yeah, I mean, this happens a lot. Somebody gets found guilty of criminal charges, and then they get slapped with a civil lawsuit on top of that. Now, the civil lawsuits usually to add insult to injury to it all. It's not like Birch is going to be capable of paying this money back, but if he was a rich guy and had an estate or something to that effect, they could have gone after it.
Birch didn't end up being told by a judge that he had to pay Dietrich $23,405.01. That's a lot less than the nearly $350,000 he was seeking. There were other monies awarded to Dietrich for lost wages and for counseling and things like that. But also, Nikki's family was awarded money from George Birch. This is the exact kind of case where we could let our perceptions run wild and we could judge somebody based on their actions one evening. Now, I'm not saying that Dietrich didn't have other actions other nights, but if we had just judged him on his actions that evening, then he stays in jail and he doesn't get out.
This is why I don't like mob mentality or vigilantism, because what if Nikki's family said, Doug absolutely did this. He's the boyfriend. They've been fighting. But the evidence, the physical evidence, dictates otherwise. That's why I do like our system. That's why I do like the investigations. The cops in this matter, they did the exact right thing. Yeah, they're going to go after Doug first. He is the primary suspect. I mean, your spouse is always going to be. But once the evidence came in, they focused where the evidence pointed.
Now, I had said that George Birch had a history. Well, in 1998, he was tried for a murder, but found not guilty. There were five charges related to the shooting of a man by the name of Joey White, who was considered a gang leader. And I guess the case fell apart because some in the jury felt that the case was sloppy. They just didn't feel like it was proven. But they're the ones deciding. That's how they found. But most people believe that Birch was related to this. Now, you could say he's looked at in two separate cases here. Murder cases. What are the odds?
Yeah, it's not good optics for him, as they like to say. And again, with Doug, it wasn't good optics later on for him to have literally a kidnapping charge against Nikki's sister. But life isn't perfect. There isn't winners and losers. There isn't a good guy and a bad guy. Nobody's perfect here, and you can't let perceptions rule your judgments.
Yeah, Birch had been married in Virginia and had kids, and when he needed what they said was a fresh start, he contacted a friend who lived in Wisconsin and moved out there, and his friend not only helped him get a job, but also loaned him a blazer. Justin, I want to leave the listeners with this. If you had any doubts about his involvement, I think he further sunk himself, because it was shortly after the murder of Nikki Vanderhaden when this vehicle just ended up getting torched.
Oh, so they couldn't search it for blood and all the evidence that they needed.
Mm-hmm. Not that I think anyone's really questioning his involvement, but
that's just the icing on the cake there.
Nikki was a mother of three. She and Douglas Dietrich had hoped to get married. You know, I just think about this, and if it weren't for DNA, if it wasn't for a Fitbit, these families would have suffered even more. Because, you know, in the past, this might have gone a completely different way. Thanks to modern technology, the real culprit was discovered. But now you have three kids growing up without a mother. You have Douglas, who I don't want to blame his 9 months after situation with her sister on this, but we just don't know what the repercussions are, the consequences of what George Birch did here. And there's no doubt that you can say it on almost every case, or if not everyone, but when someone is murdered, everyone suffers. All the family members, anyone who loved that person, everyone suffers. The children, the boyfriend, whoever it is, everyone suffers. So it's not just one life that's taken. Everyone is affected. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
It's all a lighthearted nightmare on our podcast, Morbid.
We're your hosts. I'm Alina Urquhart.
And I'm Ash Kelly.
And our show is part true crime, part spooky, and part comedy.
The stories we cover are well-researched.
He claimed and confessed to officially killing up to 28 people.
With a touch of humor.
I'd just like to go ahead and say that if there's no band called Malevolent Deity,
that is pretty great.
A dash of sarcasm and just garnished a bit with a little bit of cursing.
This motherfucker lied.
Like a liar.
And if you're a weirdo like us and love to cozy up to a creepy tale of the paranormal,
or you love to hop in the Wayback Machine and dissect the details of some of history's most notorious crimes,
you should tune in to our podcast, Morbid. Follow Morbid on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to episodes early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.